Now, Stigma of Mental Illness Radio on CosmicBroadcasting.com and the Cosmic Broadcasting app.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me today. You are listening to the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio, and my name is Chrissy Hodges, and I'm your host. I hope you're having a wonderful week, and I hope you're having a beautiful holiday season so far. I did get to listen to a little bit of the show last week, and I will tell you, I started counting the ums that I was saying during my opening of the show, and I really felt a little freaked out, and I think that my Toastmasters friends would be so disappointed in me. So the goal of this show will be to not say the word I have a few thoughts I'd like to share with you before we get to my guest today and before we get to the opportunity for your questions to be addressed here on the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. Now, this is my first call-in show ever, and I am not going to describe what my anxiety level is right now or my nervousness level, but I thought that I had an indication of what that might be, which is going to lead into my first question for the doctor that we have here today. I had a dream last night that my teeth were falling out. And so I thought to myself, and the dream was so vivid and so scary that I woke up with my hands in my mouth, making sure that all my teeth were still there. So I went on to the web and I looked up teeth that when your teeth fall out, what does that dream mean? Some answers I got here were transition. Okay, that could apply to my life a little bit right now. Insecurity, thanks a lot, as if I needed another reminder that I was insecure. And another one is loss. Dreams of teeth falling out can also highlight your feeling of having lost something or someone in your life, a deep subconscious memory, etc., etc. When I started thinking about that today, I started thinking about what this month means to me. And I believe what this month means to a lot of people, it can mean joy and it can mean excitement, but it can also be very difficult for people, not only for normal people who don't suffer with mental illness or brain disorders, but it can be very difficult for people who have mental illnesses. Now, just to share with you, it was 17 years ago this week I attempted suicide as a result of living with a brain disorder for 17 years in silence. And my apologies, 12 years in silence, not having any idea that I was sick whatsoever, just thinking that whatever I was dealing with and suffering with, I deserved somehow because I was a bad person. And I didn't attempt suicide because I felt as if I wanted to die or perhaps I should die. I attempted suicide because I didn't think that there was any other option. Do I think maybe the holidays exacerbated that? Absolutely. I think that what we do sometimes during the holiday season is we examine what our expectations are. And we look at our life and we say, are we meeting these expectations? But one thing I want to bring up as a reminder to myself is that our expectations may come from something a long time ago, from when we were a child, what we think Christmas should be like based on our memories of Christmas when we were younger, and we believe these aren't meeting our expectations, or what we believe our family should be like, or our relationship. I just want to remind you that expectations can be looked at every single day, and that they can be changed, and we change every year. Who I was 17 years ago with a mental illness is not who I am today. I still go through very difficult periods of time, and suicide will cross my mind. However, I will never be in that spot again. So for those of us that are suffering this season, maybe with a little depression and blues about what we feel like we should have or want, sometimes it's good to take a step back and look at what our expectations are. Look at where we are and look at how we can improve based on what our needs and wants are now versus maybe what we thought that they should be 20 years ago or even 5 years ago. And for all of us this season, I would like to send a reminder to please watch out for the people that you love. this is a difficult time for many people. And a lot of people's emotions fall through the cracks because there is so much hustle and bustle going on. If you find that a coworker or a friend or a family member seems a little bit down or distant, or if they look like their behaviors, moods, or energy levels are changing and you notice it, you might want to reach out to them. I know it's scary, but it's better to be safe and to ask someone if they're okay. Even if they say everything's fine, they're going to take note that you care and may come to you later and ask for some help. But the holidays are supposed to be a time of fun and enjoyment, and sometimes it can be difficult for other people, and sometimes it can be difficult for you. If you need some help, reach out. There's counseling services. There are people that you love that would help you in a second. All it takes is to ask for help. With that said, I'd like to move on to the portion of our show where we are going to open up the phone lines for you to call in and ask a question for Dr. Mark Comrade. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks very much. It's nice to be back.
Mark was on a few months ago. We talked about his book that he has, You Need Help, A Step-by-Step Plan to Convince a Loved One to Get Counseling. And he has so much thorough knowledge in the field of mental health and mental illness. So we're opening it up for any question whatsoever. Now, Mark, I did put it out on Facebook, and a lot of people obviously don't want to come on the show and ask a question, but I did several email questions.
That's good. And before I start answering questions, by the way, let me just, I heard your introduction, and I just want to offer my celebration of the anniversary of your survival.
And you
certainly have made, to quote Shakespeare, virtue of adversity and turned your experience into a wonderful public empowerment. And I really think that this particular anniversary is a cause of appreciation and celebration for you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I don't know if that's why my teeth were falling out in my dream.
Well, if I could just say something about that. You know, I think one of the things that's very important that we've kind of learned in psychiatry, and, you know, dream interpretation goes back, of course, centuries, but modern grappling with dreams really dates back to Freud and Jung and so forth. And it's very important for people to understand that you cannot really, there really doesn't seem to be a lot of validity to dream dictionaries where you can kind of look up standard dreams and get an interpretation. We really know that understanding a dream and unpacking it and its symbolism really needs a knowledge, a very personal knowledge of the dreamer, right? So for one person, maybe teeth falling out has some association to, you know, her mother's dental problems that she remembers as an important part of her childhood growing up. To another person, there may be associations to teeth that may lean in a very different direction, you know, a terrible dog bite and so forth. For others, there may be an issue that's, that has to do with a relationship that they're involved in, and you would unpack the meaning of teeth falling out differently. So it's just very important to know the dreamer whenever it comes to dream interpretation. I tend to discourage people from going to stock dream dictionaries. So if you want to come on my couch and I'll get to know you, then I can tell you what your dream is about.
Well, this does move into my question, which I would like to ask, and then I do believe we have someone that is going to call in. I would like to ask this question. I posted it on my Facebook page, and I had some different responses. Now, Mark, do people who have mental illnesses or some sort of brain chemistry, brain disorder, do they have different types of dreams, as in more vivid dreams than normal people?
Well, I actually need to back up and address maybe a bigger issue that's packed into that question. Because when you use the term mental illness, it's such a huge, broad term. The analogy I like to use is using the word Christian, right? So when you use the word Christian, what are we talking about? Are we talking about Catholic or Methodist or African Methodist Episcopal or Mormon or Rosicrucian. I mean, there are many, many different flavors, if you will, of Christianity. It's a huge, broad term. And similarly, when we use the term mental illness, are we talking about schizophrenia or bipolar disorder? Are we talking about post-traumatic stress disorder or panic disorder? Or are we talking
Let's say OCD.
Okay, OCD. but just to finish the thought, you know, and not every problem that causes difficulties in the domain of mental life is even necessarily best construed as a disease. There are personality disorders. There are problems, you know, maintaining relationships and getting along with authority figures and so forth. So not everything really comes down to a broken part in the brain. There are a whole variety of different kinds of conditions that show up in a mental health professional's office. So, right. So I just want the listeners to really be aware that although we throw the term mental illness around a lot, we're really talking about an extraordinarily broad category of problems, which the only thing they have in common is that they occur in the domain of mental life. Namely, you know, they manifest themselves as disturbances in thoughts, feelings, or behaviors. Those are kind of the three dimensions of mental life. So let's just, we all need to just be very open and broad when we use the term mental illness. So when you ask, you know, what kinds of dreams come up in mental illnesses, you know, we need to drill down and focus on what kinds of illnesses we're talking about. And it really doesn't appear to necessarily be any particular kinds of themes that are related to any one specific kind of mental illness. We do know that there are some conditions that can cause more vivid dreams,
okay.
such as alcoholism, for example, particularly during the part of the night when the alcohol is wearing off. In the first part of the night, it suppresses dreams, and in the second part of the night, it can very significantly enhance dreams. We know that in depression, people with depression actually tend to dream less, and we can actually show this in the laboratory where we can show that they have less episodes of REM sleep. That's the portion of the sleep that we can record on EEG in which dreaming occurs, and people who have depression have less REM sleep. With other conditions in terms of how they might affect dreams, sometimes the effect is more about the treatment for the condition than it is the condition itself. There are many medications that affect dreaming, some of which suppress dreaming, and others you can actually have nightmares as a side effect of those medications. So that's a pretty nonspecific answer to give you just some examples of some of the ways mm-hmm. in which the illnesses that we're talking about under this broad umbrella can affect dreams.
Okay, I like that. I will take the alcohol into account sometimes if I have a vivid dream, that's for sure.
Definitely.
okay, we do have a caller in, so we're going to have her come on and ask a question. Lynn, will you connect us? Is that how that works?
Hello, I can hear you. Thank you.
Karen? Hello, Dr. Karen. Tom. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for calling in.
I know. I'm glad I called in. How are you both?
Good. Thanks for calling. What can I answer for you today?
Well, okay, mental health. Gosh. So I'm immersed in that right now. I have a young 17-year-old son with Asperger's syndrome and OCD, and everything is kind of really presenting through depression for him, like anhedonia. No, I'm not happy, nothing, I have no joy, I look forward to nothing, deeply depressed, and pretty treatment resistant. We've had 4 straight years of this, so lots of drugs and lots of chiropractic and acupuncture and you name it, we've done it, we've taken it, and nothing seems to really be helping him at all. And so now we're on this path of biomedical integrative holistic health through a company in Fort Collins, a place, a center, that that says they look at the whole child. They take blood, they do an EEG, they do everything and try to integrate with 12 different professionals, including psychiatrists and psychologists and MDs and naturopaths, to try and figure out, EEG especially, an approach to at least medications that haven't worked and why, and they take a scan of the brain. I want to know how you feel about that approach, the whole integrative medicine.
Well, I think integrative medicine, the idea of treating people as a whole, you know, is certainly a very significant and I think very valid way of thinking about things. And I think, you know, mind and body are clearly very connected in a variety of ways, with the arrows pointing in both directions, the mind affecting the body and the body affecting the mind. And lifestyle issues, you know, very much have a part to play in the development and the treatment of mental illnesses. So, for example, we know there's some very good research out there about the value of exercise for depression. Although one of the interesting things about that is I always wonder who signs up for those studies, very special people who actually would show up for a study on exercise and depression, because I have a hard time getting my depressed patients exercising.
He can't even take a walk, so that's the problem with it. He knows what's good for him. He does. He gets it. He can't even, he can't get there. So I understand that, and eating right, and we've definitely done a nutritional evaluation. We've done a blood draw. We've done show him.
Right. On the side of nutrition, by the way, we're beginning to develop some interesting understandings, new understandings of the role that in some people, not in everybody, the role of folate plays in the treatment of depression. And there are some people who genetically...
Right, he has the gene, the MTHFR.
Right. And it's people who have impairments in that particular gene may have difficulty in some steps of the metabolic pathways that involve folate and ultimately the synthesis of the important so-called monoamine neurotransmitters, those chemicals that nerve cells use to talk to one another, and that sometimes giving a special formulation, and actually pretty high dose, called L-methylfolate, can very significantly convert a non-responder into a responder. So that's just one example. Also,
that's what they gave him last week at this place, right?
Yeah.
And so we took it, and his anxiety got really peaky. Like all of a sudden, needed his Xanax first time in many months. So I called, and they said, "Yeah, you got to go off for a few days, and we'll go back on at a lesser."
Yeah, and you can go back on a lower dose. Generally, the experience is that for those people who have that genetic finding, it really takes several months for the folate situation to work. The other things, you know, we look for also are other endocrine systems, like the thyroid system and the pituitary system, can sometimes have some malfunctionings that can make the people treatment resistant to depression. So there's some emerging new technologies and including some new treatment approaches. So, for example, there's a new treatment approach utilizing very intense, powerful magnetic pulses. It's called transcranial magnetic stimulation. That it's kind of like, somewhat analogous to electroconvulsive therapy, except the person doesn't have to be under anesthesia. This can happen when they're awake and they sit under this very powerful pulsing magnet for 20 minutes every single day. And it's not,
there a side effect to that?
The side effects are pretty low-key, pretty minimal, as a matter of fact.
Can you tell me what it's called again?
It's called transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS.
Okay.
And it is actually an FDA-approved treatment. It's been very robustly researched. It's and there are a number of centers now that have gotten the TMS machine. Something you probably should ask the current treaters about.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be used actually in conjunction with medication. For some people, the two together are better than either alone. Then, in addition to some of these biological and physical treatments that we've been talking about, you know, there's a great great deal of evidence out there for the value of certain kinds of psychotherapies, and particularly psychotherapies combined with medication. And the two seem to be more than the sum of the parts.
Like CBT,
so, for example, CBT is one of the kinds of evidence-based psychotherapies that can tremendously enhance response when used together with antidepressants from a really good, very well-trained cognitive behavior therapist. So, you know, I in this day and age when we're all so dazzled with neuroscience, and also in this day and age where we're all looking for the simple and quick solutions, unfortunately, very often the more laborious and longer-term talk therapies tend to get pushed, unfortunately, to the background.
Right.
And, you know, people are busy messing, turning all the dials on the neurochemistry, and sometimes that tends to get neglected. So I often, in my own practice, I guess I'm one of those psychiatrists who still is a one-stop shopping place, and I provide both talk therapy and medication therapy, and the two being more than the sum of the parts, as I said. So I think those are very important things to keep in mind as well when dealing with treatment-resistant depression. And one of the problems with adolescent and child depression is that most of the medication treatments have really not been studied in children. It's hard to recruit children for research. So a lot of the treatments are by analogies to adults.
Can I ask a question about that concerning medication? He went on very young. He his OCD was pretty present even at four, and the developmental pediatrician put him on a little bit of Zoloft, just a little liquid, and then went up to, you know, very small amounts. But he was on it 10 years when we went off to give him a little break. And I wonder now, was that a mistake? Did that do something to instigate this, you know, puberty?
Well, I think it all depends on whether it was a value. I mean, there's no question that, you know, getting OCD treated is extraordinarily valuable. Untreated OCD is going to be far, far more disruptive to the brain and to development than any medication could possibly be. So, you know, you have to think about the, you know, cost-benefit ratio here.
Right, well, that's true, yeah. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's great. And one other question. I'm sorry to do this, but someone else, somebody online had been talking about prescribing oxytocin for autism. Have you ever heard of that, like a hormone?
Right, so oxytocin is a pituitary hormone that is very relevant in pregnancy and childbirth and breastfeeding. There's some animal research to show that oxytocin may actually help pair bonding in certain mammals. There's some very preliminary research in human beings that involves some basic psychological studies, but there is absolutely no ready-for-prime-time evidence that that oxytocin has some value. Now, let me add one additional kind of now-on-the-horizon exciting thing that's emerging. And as a matter of fact, there's a big article about this in yesterday's New York Times, as a matter of fact. And that's the emerging story about a medication called ketamine. K-E-T-A-M-I-N-E.
Right, they do injections of those.
Right.
A couple of people are doing that, yeah.
Right. Now, ketamine is been around for a long time. It's often used as an anesthetic, in general anesthesia for children, as a matter of fact. So ketamine in children has actually, you know, been around for a while. And we're coming to realize, and it's got to be done very carefully because too much ketamine can actually cause people to hallucinate. And to have trips. Right. And, of course, you know, it is a drug of abuse, I think. It's Special K out on the streets. And so,
right.
So it's got to be done under doctor's care. It's administered intravenously. And it's being looked at because it can work very, very quickly. We're starting to do some protocols where people who come to emergency rooms with acute suicidal feelings getting ketamine and reverse emergency room and improving people, you know, within 30 or 60 minutes to the level where they can actually go home and not have to come into the hospital.
Wow.
This is, again, not ready for prime time. It's not commercially available. It's mostly in research protocols. There are one or two docs who have taken upon themselves to, you know, be out way ahead of the pack and are actually making it available. There's one in New Jersey and Princeton. And I don't know, where are you finding people that are actually way out ahead?
Denver. I shouldn't probably use names, but he's always done the whole like viral thing. He thought years ago that Jack should go on an antiviral, and it was really bad. And now he's doing ketamine injection. I think he's sort of, a lot of things get shot down that he does as well, and he's very very expensive, and he's kind of not really fun to talk to.
So there are things that are way ahead. The science has not quite caught up to the clinical arts, and some people, you know, decide, well, you know, I'll go ahead and be an early adopter, you know, probably 10 years.
Pretty desperate to see him smile. There's no doubt about it. It's been a lot of years. This is not a few weeks on and off like most of us get depressed. It's very different and profound, and, you know, I would do anything damn near, except they talked to him about ketamine, and he looked at me like, no.
So it would most certainly be worth, though, discussing with them transcranial magnetic stimulation and also electroconvulsive therapy. I mean, if I have seen miracles in psychiatry in my time, it has been with electroconvulsive therapy. Now, it doesn't always produce such a robust effect, but man, oh man, any psychiatrist will tell you some just amazing cases in which ECT, you know, didn't merely save lives, but transformed lives. And I have a whole line of patients.
Back in the day, you're talking about shock treatments.
No. I'm talking about 2014.
Okay.
I want to really make something very, very clear. ECT is a mainstream, safe, very widely used treatment in psychiatry today. Now, it goes back
and effective,
many years.
Very effective.
Very effective. I have a whole line of patients who keep reminding me, if anybody ever wants to, you know, be reassured that it's a really good treatment, please give them my name.
Can I have their name?
I won't give it out on the air. So,
I really would love to
contact me, Karen.
Here's something that I can recommend.
Okay.
There's a wonderful video, and as a matter of fact, it's a documentary, and it's based on the book written by Kitty Dukakis, the famous Michael Dukakis' wife, who famously had ECT. By the way, Carrie Fisher also is a celebrity that actually gets maintenance ECT. The documentary is called, very simply, Shock, which is an unfortunate name, but that's the documentary. And a documentary film by Ray Osborne. I'm holding in my hand right now. And you can get it, I don't know if it's available on Netflix or you can get it on Amazon. The documentary Shock. And it's a very, very good documentary to use to educate yourself about electroconvulsive therapy. There's one last thing that I'd like to say.
I've been hospitalized a few times in my life growing up, and there were a lot of the other going on. So I've seen firsthand, you know, some of the vegetables that it turned out in the past. That's why I'm a little concerned. I know it's just something, thing with me.
Yeah, well, I understand you may have that feeling. I'll tell you, I've been in this business for a quarter century.
Mm-hmm.
I've prescribed ECT for hundreds of people. I've administered it myself way back early on in my career. I was the ECT doctor. I had never in my career seen that outcome. So I'm not saying those outcomes don't exist. I'm just saying that if they exist, and most of my, I have yet to see a colleague also who said, oh, yeah, I had one of those. So if
that's
they exist,
that's
they're very rare. Unfortunately, they tend to get a lot of attention. But, you know, just like, you know, the rare case of somebody who died from an aspirin gets a lot of attention.
No, that's true. Negative, negative. Well, thank you, doctor, so much.
You're welcome.
You,
I hope these are some helpful things you can talk with the treaters
about. You were great. I appreciate it. Tell me your name.
Dr. Comrade.
Okay.
K-O-M-R-A-D. Thanks so much
for
calling.
Thank you, Chrissy. Thank you, Dr. Comrade. Bye.
Bye.
And Dr. Comrade, we are going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we're going to kick it off with an email question, and then we'll take another call from our listeners. So thank you for joining us this first hour for the call-in show with Dr. Mark Comrade. We'll see you in just a few minutes here at the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio.
Hey, this is Sam Farnsworth, sports director at KKTV Channel 11 in Colorado Springs, but now I'm also on the team at Cosmic Broadcasting. Listen to my show, The Press Box, each Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock Mountain Time. We'll cover it all, from high school sports in your backyard all the way to the pros, exclusive interviews, and of course, we want the listeners involved. We'll take your phone calls and your tweets all on The Press Box.
Hey guys, this is Lynn Williams of Cosmic Broadcasting, and if you've ever had an issue with a computer or a computer system, you know how frustrating those things can be. I just had the pleasure of talking with Michael Clark of MRC Technology, and I come away from the meeting thinking that this is the guy that can do it all. Runs a company that specializes in network and computer support, can work on most computer system issues, has over 30 years of experience in the field. Anything from virus cleanup, firewalls, security, web and email hosting, even workstation and server maintenance. This guy can get the job done for you. Windows, Macs, or Linux, you can count on them to do whatever it takes to resolve your issues. Do yourself a favor and get in contact with MRC Technology. 5050 Edison Avenue, Suite 111, right down the hall from Cosmic Broadcasting. Michael Clark, MRC Technologies. Give him a call at 719-362-0710 or check out the web at www.mrct.us.
What separates us from them?
Juda, Chilia, Kelite, quality, qualitet, qualità, qualidade, quality, jakost, kajistva, qualidad, quality, ansaud, upora, latu.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Quality.
It sounds the same no matter where you're from. Cosmic Broadcasting.
Don't forget, you can take our shows wherever you go. Download the Cosmic Broadcasting app. It's free for your Apple or Android device.
To the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. My name is Chrissy Hodges, and I am your host. If you enjoy the show so far, or if you enjoy any of the shows that I have each week, you have an opportunity to be a listener supporter, which pays to have the show on this station, as well as advertising out, so other people can find out about the show, and so they can listen, and they can feel not as alone with their mental health issue or with their loved one who has a mental health issue. This is what this show is about. It's hope and encouragement for people who could be suffering in silence or who are working toward recovery or in the personal stigma stages. If you wanted to be a supporter of the show, you can support as low as a dollar per show. This is done through patreon.com, a great company that provides a way for small endeavors like mine to be able to be funded by the people who care about the projects they're doing. It's Patreon, patreon.com/the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. You can go to that link, learn a little bit more about me and about what the show is and why it is that I'm doing this and trying to be an advocate to eliminate and to lower the stigma for people who have mental illness. I do want to give a big thank you and a shout out to one of my patrons and friend, Mr. David Kramer. David has been on the show before, and he will be on the show again in January to promote a book that he wrote that was inspired by being on the show. This is one of the greatest stories I love about having the show, is that I had David on and he'd never really talked about what he had been through in his life, and he came onto the show and it just gave him this rush of energy and inspiration to want to help other people. And that is what he has been doing since he was on the show, probably over a year ago, I believe. And we'll have him on again what he did is he told his story and then felt so empowered, and then he decided to write a book. And his book is called Entering the Real World. Now, I'm telling you this right now because it just got published, but I'm also telling you because this is a great Christmas gift for people, for your, if you don't know what to get someone who's going into college or someone who's graduating for college and you think, what am I going to buy this person? This is the book to buy. Entering the Real World has over 140 easy-to-use timeless ideas to help young adults succeed in the real world. Written by an entrepreneur-turned-university teacher, the book emphasizes proven ideas that can be easily used for fast, positive results. We are all born with zero knowledge and the capacity to learn. Though we do absorb many valuable ideas and lessons in school, almost none include how to interview successfully. I agree with that. Get great reference letters, save money, resolve conflicts, learn the lingo of the workplace, think for yourself, communicate. Entering the Real World addresses all of these skills and much more in a brief, easy-to-read section, which of many takeaway summary and are ways to take action on the idea. For less than 25 cents an idea, Entering the Real World is a great holiday gift from parents, grandparents, and friends. You can find Entering the Real World on Amazon.com/entering-real.world-timeless. How about I just put it on my Facebook page so that way you can click directly to it, or you could just search Amazon Entering the Real World. It sounds like after I read this blurb that maybe I need to read Entering the Real World and get some advice. Hey, David. Anyway, congratulations, David. Look forward to talking to you. Just wanted to give you so much thanks for always being such a great support and encourager of my show and all the work that I'm doing. You can be a support as well. Go to patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio and pledge your support so we can continue to change people's lives and we can continue to reach people who really need some hope and encouragement in a time where they cannot find any. Dr. Mark Comrade, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. We are going to kick off this hour with a couple email questions that I have. This particular person wanted to call in and then at the last minute was unable to because she got pulled away to do something else. Margaret wanted me to ask you that there are a few colleges that have programs for individuals who have addiction. Have you heard of any of these programs? And what can we do to get more?
Well, the whole challenge of student mental health on college campuses, you know, is very much an alive and important issue. You know, we have now more students entering college who have had a treatment history themselves of some kind of psychiatric problem or probably on medications, whether it's for attention deficit disorder or mood disorder, both, or other problems. So colleges are really finding themselves having to be equipped to deal with students' mental health issues. Then, on top of that, we have, you know, the always the ever-present problem of substance abuse on campus. And, of course, those things tend to go in and out of the news, depending on the latest tragedies of people overdosing on pills or on alcohol, or the whole date rape controversies that are so mixed in with drinking on campuses, the whole Rolling Stone UVA mess that's been going on for the last few weeks. So and there are a number of organizations out there to try to promote mental health and substance abuse treatment on campus, and it's growing. It really is growing. Pretty much most colleges now have some kind of mental health for many of them, substance abuse counseling available on campus in the student health center. Indeed, there are some colleges that even have a separate student mental health center, kind of a standing on its own, even apart from general student health. So I can't inventory for you right now which campus campuses have what, but I can certainly say that things are improving. Things are improving. When it comes to substance abuse, though, I think that there's a very long legacy of, in the opinion of most mental health professionals, over-tolerance on the part of campuses for dysfunctional drinking, or even underage dysfunctional drinking, depending on the state that you're in. A lot of this often revolves around fraternity and sorority life, although not exclusively, and sports, football culture, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we're coming to understand the CDC is kind of all over this, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. It's really been doing some very important work documenting really the epidemic of substance abuse in particular on campuses around the country, documenting that, in fact, as many as 28% of all undergraduates would meet the criteria for, you know, a clinically significant binge drinking disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, identifying those people, beginning to create some sense of a kind of a renorming of what is considered safe drinking, being able to identify problem substance abuse and drinking on campus is really a cultural shift that's having to take place. And that's a very, very important part of the solutions over and above, you know, having enough mental health counselors and appropriately trained people and a center to go to. Is a cultural shift that's needing to take place on college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, with regard to other substances like marijuana, I mean, this is a very, very significant problem, especially as we're beginning to see the emergence of decriminalization of marijuana, legalization of marijuana, and so forth. We certainly know that the effect of marijuana on brain development is very severe during the developmental period that really doesn't end until about 25, 26 years old in terms of that window of vulnerability and sensitivity. It's one of the reasons why, you know, many of these marijuana laws still, you know, retain the prohibition against minors having it. But it really is a neurodevelopmental problem. And there's a lot of that going on both in high school and, of course, in college. And a lot of people said, well, you know, we smoked pot when we were young, a lot of parents and so forth. Very important to understand that today's marijuana is 20 times the potency of the marijuana of the 60s. In some cases, 30 times the potency in terms of the THC, tetrahydrocannabinol levels, which really are the psychoactive ingredients and the ingredient that very much affects neurodevelopment. So when you think about, well, you know, when I was back in college, you know, you pass around the joint here and there, it is absolutely a totally different drug than what's out there now. Not to mention other things that we know may even be worse for neurodevelopment, such as synthetic cannabinoids like spice. Turns out spice may actually be worse than marijuana, and it's legal in most states. You can buy it at a gas station. So public policy and politics on this kinds of issues, on these substances, are way, way, way out ahead of science and are not at all taking into account the science from the point of departure of brain research. So those are some of the reflections I have about substance abuse and mental health on college campuses.
Okay. Well, we do have a caller in, Dr. Comrade, and we have Lou here on line two. Lou, welcome to the show.
Hi. Is this Chrissy?
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for calling in. I can't wait to hear your question.
Hello, Lou.
Hi. What What are you discussing today, pretty much?
Well, this is an open Ask the Doctor opportunity where people can ask me. I'm a psychiatrist. Anything they wanted to ask about mental health, psychiatric treatment, mental illness, pretty much everything you've always wanted to ask a psychiatrist, but were afraid to or didn't have the time.
Well, I've never been afraid to ask psychiatrist questions. Usually it's looking at me like I'm on another planet. But
funny how they often look at us.
Anyway, you know, I've had some issues, and I'm now finding out that I'm actually going blind. My right eye has been blind for, I don't know, about 6 months, and we thought it was just a transient thing. It's not, and now my left eye is starting. So I'm probably going to be blind in a year to 14 months, something like that. That's what
that's dreadful.
Well, it's saying. And, you know, it's very hard to deal with that. And I really have given very serious thought about killing myself. And the reason being is it's not due to depression, I don't think. It's just basically, I would say it's just common sense. First of all, when I...
I need to stop you.
Okay.
Because, I mean, we're not going to have time for a big debate, but let me just tell you that there is absolutely nothing about suicide that's just common sense. There's absolutely nothing about suicide that is irrational and justifiable option from the point of departure of people who think about the human mind, the human psyche, and mental life. So I don't want to let that statement go by that, you know, it's perfectly understandable and rational that I would want to take my life. But let me just tell you that there's you know, millions and millions and millions of people in this country alone who are totally blind, some of them from birth, but most of them actually not from birth. Most acquired blindness. And there are tremendous organizations out there that are designed to help people who are going blind to cope with that, to be able to, you know, acquire the skills and technology to be able to compensate for that, to be able to have a very, very meaningful life. And I think for you to choose that option to, you know, consider suicide as your solution to going blind, you know, would be an extraordinarily tragic mistake, as tragic as, you know, I choose to let my pneumonia kill me, you know, rather than taking the antibiotics.
Right.
So,
well, I hear what you're saying, but here's the situation. I'm a musician. I play in the symphony orchestra. I'm having trouble reading music now. Once I can't read music anymore, once I go blind, I won't be able to work anymore in my chosen field. I've been doing this 45 years, and this is my life. It's not a job. It's my life. Once that ends, I will not be able to do this anymore.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
I
can certainly understand.
Listen to me.
No, wait. I understand because I'm not going to treat you, okay? But what I am going
to
do
is use your
example to try to teach something to the listeners, okay? And what I want to teach to the listeners is that, you know, when we lose something very significant, you know, it's obviously a very, very major blow. However, with help, and maybe with professional help, to begin to reformat our lives, to be able to shift and to acquire new interests, to find new talents and new skills, to be able to refocus how we think about ourselves and acquire meaning is something that therapy can absolutely accomplish. And I've led many, many people on such a journey. And so the technology for dealing with your loss, the psychological technology, and to transform a loss into an opportunity and to take a journey of transformation. The technology is there. And I want our listeners to understand that. I hope you understand that. But, you know, I'm not treating you. I'm trying to educate people here.
I do to a degree. But, you see, in my situation, for instance, I also design theaters, studios, even home theaters, music systems, and in order to do that, I mean, I still have very good ears, is to be able to use the equipment, and it's all visual right now. I mean, they don't have any way to translate this stuff. And because I know someone who's been blind for about 40 years, and he's in the field, and there's still a lot of things that are missing that he can't do.
Yeah.
So that would have to go by the wayside. And frankly, I don't have any other reason, but this is, here's the main reason, and it's important for people to hear this. I had an injury, a bad injury in Germany 4 years ago, and I still, it's a chronic injury. Don't warn you of that. The bottom line is my wife went to hell taking care of me. But in this country, unlike Europe, we don't have cradle-to-grave universal care. Oh, no, the Republicans make sure we'll never have that. So what we have is a mess. So my wife literally is suffering from PTSD because of what she saw me go through. I went through terrible depression. I couldn't get out of bed, but the pain was so bad. This happened lasted for 3 years. I will never, ever allow someone to go through that again. I will never, ever allow someone to have to take care of me. If I cannot take care of myself 100%, I don't want to be here. But it's unfair to ask other people, particularly close to you, to do that. You're ruining their lives, and you know, we have to think about them as well as ourselves.
Okay, I can turn to Chrissy in this and know that you're a resource there to try to get people the kinds of professional help that they need. And I hope that, you know, this gentleman will avail himself of, you know, your resources, because it sounds like, as the title of my book says, I think he could really use the help. And I hope you can help him find
it. I think this is an interesting, unfortunately, we don't have very much time left. But, you know, I think this is an interesting conversation and an interesting topic that I wouldn't mind broaching at some point in the future, as we are moving into an era where, yes, people are, you know, there was the huge debate about self-assisted suicide and things of that nature. Now, I am not, just so everyone knows that is listening, of course, I do not want to look for suicide as the answer to anything, because I almost ended my life that way as well. However, I think it's an interesting discussion.
Oh, it's an interesting discussion. I think it's a discussion for a different radio show than a radio show that's dedicated to helping people with their mental health and with trying to access what we do have available in the 21st century to help rescue people from the darkness. But I'm sure there's another radio show out there where this would be a topic that's suited to their mission. Doesn't sound like, from my understanding, it's something suited to the mission of this radio show.
Right,
but you're the host, and I guess you'll decide.
Well, I think I was just kind of just making a comment of just trying to mediate. I don't know, but unfortunately, we are running out of town anyway.
Okay, but I hope you can find offer this gentleman, you know, whatever the resources that I know your show offers to deal with hopelessness, despair, loss, and, you know, the journey of reformatting one's life, and the set, whether it's losing one's spouse,
How about making them take care of you when you can't take care of yourself?
Sounds like
if we had paid for health care here like I do in Europe, I wouldn't mind. But here, we don't.
I don't know the systems in Colorado. I'm in Baltimore, but we have many, many resources here in Baltimore for affordable care. Some of which is even free. So, again, I'll leave that to Chrissy to be able to inventory what are the available resources in your area.
Well, we are going to have to move forward from this. I am getting to the point of the cutoff. But, Lou, thank you for the call. And absolutely, we'll be in touch email, of course, and we'll have some further discussion about this. But thank you for calling in today.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye.
And we just have 1 or 2 minutes left, but I do have an important question that I want to ask you. I get this every single time. Every single time I'm speaking, probably, especially when I'm talking to teenagers, but we only have a minute or two. But I just would love to hear your opinion, Dr. Comrade, of can you give us, this is a question I always get, and I always give my standard answer, but I would just love to hear your answer. And that is, when someone's newly diagnosed with a mental illness, especially as a teenager, can you give some advice on how it is they can communicate to their best friends of what it is that they're diagnosed with and just how to tell them without feeling insecure?
Right. So one of the interesting things is that far more teenagers these days than anybody realizes have been through this. And very often you'll discover that more of your friends than you realize have been through this themselves. I think in a way the stigma of these kinds of disorders is far less, I think, among the younger generation, just like all sorts of prejudices seem to be thankfully fading among the younger generation. I think it's very important for you to be able to get the support from your friends, to not have this in silence. Now, there are organizations that have support groups for specifically for teenagers, and kind of learning the language to use as a teenager can really be acquired for that. National Alliance on Mental Illness, for example, has peer-to-peer support groups, mm-hmm. many of which are for teenagers, to begin to find the language they share with one another and to mine the wisdom of your peers as to how they have dealt with this with their friends. There are actually a few books out there that are specifically oriented to teenagers about how to cope and how to deal with this. And then finally, there are tremendous array of support sites on the Internet in which, including some that are specifically geared to adolescents who are suffering from various disorders. It's a site almost for every disorder, mm-hmm. with blogs, with chat rooms, with email support, in which and resources that are specifically designed for adolescents. And that's something really worth looking into. And, of course, you know, kids are very much into the Internet and social media, a number of Twitter sites and Facebook sites that are devoted to this.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being here today. I seriously can't believe that the hour just flew by.
Indeed.
Like it did. And we've had some very interesting discussions.
We have. We have. And I hope that, you know, I've shared some helpful ideas both with the callers and those who are listening.
Absolutely. And I would love to be able for in the future to be able to refer you or to refer your book. And, you know,
speaking
definitely.
Speaking of my book, which just for the listeners is You Need Help, a step-by-step guide to convince a loved one to get counseling. You can find out more about it at the website, very simple, youneedhelpbook.com, youneedhelpbook.com. And mm-hmm. by the way, the book has a very hefty appendix with all sorts of resources, including an entire section, just thinking about the last caller, that gives people direction about how to find treatment, many resources for that, including how to find affordable treatment. So there are some guides there in the back of my book that can help.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I'd love to get you on at another time, maybe in the new year of 2015. I think I may be changing the format of the show, but it definitely will be good to include someone to come on and answer some questions again.
Glad to.
And thank you to the listeners. Thank you to my call-ins and to everyone who emailed. If I didn't get to your questions, don't worry. We will have another show like this at some point, and you'll be at the top of the list. I hope that you have a wonderful Christmas season. I will be on one more time before Christmas, so please tune in next week as well. You have been listening to The Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. My name is Chrissy Hodges, and we are hosted by CosmicBroadcasting.com. Have a great week.